Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana.
All right, how you guys doing? Come on in, let's do it. You're about to listen to the Art of Wrestling professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast, it's a personal journal, it's an entryway into the minds and souls, the hearts and lives of the people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I am your host. My name is Colt Cabana. I am a court newsman. I'm also a spray tanner. I didn't want to have to admit that, but I did. Most importantly, though, I am a professional wrestler. And I am not sitting here live in the studio. Apartment in Chicago, Illinois. I am in a hotel doing secret missions on the west coast of the United States of America. Always interesting and self-conscious when you're yelling in a hotel room and you know there are people walking right by your room wondering why this man is speaking to himself so loud, but I will do it. Before we go any further, though, this is a fan-supported and listener-supported podcast supported by people just like you. We give it to you free of charge every single Thursday. ColtCabana.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. A couple great ways that you can support, rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend, let somebody know what's going on, maybe via social media, maybe via text, maybe via high five. Or if you got a couple of bucks in your pocket, head on over to ColtMerch.com or DigitalColt.com. T-shirts, buttons, pictures, posters, DVDs, digital downloads, premium podcasts, episodes 1 through 35. Plus, I'm having a live comedy show in Chicago April 9th. All tickets available, ColtCabana.com, ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com. All right, the guest this week is a pretty cool one, a pretty fun one. Maybe some of you guys wondering, how does this even come? We kind of hit on it on the first seconds of the talk. Vader and I had a car ride, had like an hour and a half car journey together where we talked and we bullshitted and we caught up with our lives. Actually, a weird story. One of my best friends growing up named Aaron Moorhead, who is now a coach at Texas A&M. Congratulations to him. His father was Emery Moorhead, who played with the Chicago Bears, the Super Bowl winning Chicago Bears, amongst others, played at the University of Colorado. Big Van Vader also played at Colorado. So you have to imagine me. You guys know me enough by now, I think. The super fan, my buddy Aaron, whose father, Emery, used to play football with Vader in the mid-90s. I was going crazy, like talking to Emery, saying like how much I wanted to meet him, how he was one of my heroes. And Emery's just like, baby bull? Yeah. Oh, he was mean on the field. Like, to Emery, it was like no big deal. It was just baby bull Leon White. But to me, it was like the god of heavyweight wrestlers. Big Van Vader was a guy that I knew through my friend, through my father. Like, I didn't even care that my buddy's dad was on the Super Bowl winning Chicago Bears. To me, it was unbelievable that that man knew and played football with Big Van Vader. Again, that just goes to show how big of a fucking weirdo I am when it comes to wrestling obsession as a child, and now how I can easily relay these stories to you. Also, one more weird thing I'm going to admit on this podcast, which I've never admitted before, but it's not like a weird thing that I'm afraid to admit. So this is why people actually can have podcasts. Like, I'm telling this story, and for most people in the world, it's like, who wants to hear this guy talk? But for some of you, you could appreciate this. I played baseball as a kid a lot in high school too, and I always thought that the seams of the baseball kind of looked like Vader's hair. So I one day in class drew the Vader mask and his look and everything on a baseball, and I had a Vader ball, and that's what I would warm up with, is my Vader ball. Sad? Yes. Weird? Yes. Good thing I didn't share that until now with a lot of people? Yes. Full circle that he's now my buddy and he's in the car with me and then he's in the hotel with me and we're sharing a podcast talking about life. Amazing. Vader was a hero of mine, one of my favorites, and it's kind of weird to see him on a different level now. You can hear, I guess, almost how timid he is, I don't even want to say unsure. It's interesting. It's an interesting conversation almost to hear how he talks. But I really feel that through this conversation, whatever information comes out, it's probably stuff you've really heard. But I think in his voice, you can kind of hear what person Big Van Vader really is. And I invite you to take that all in with this conversation with two different generations of pro wrestlers. And we don't touch a lot on the American stuff. This is really a big journey into Japanese wrestling, I guess, 90s and 2000s Japanese wrestling. So if that's something that wets your whistle or a friend's whistle, you might want to tell them about this and get ready to dive in there with Big Van Vader. For me, there was some big news coming up this week, some stuff in the legal system. I will not be talking about any of that. I just will say that never have I experienced more stress and anxiety in my life than the last week since this was announced. So that's where I'm going to leave that. Hopefully you can respect that. And we can just move on to talking about stuff that we love, that I love, especially the idea that I did all of that this past weekend. Two of my favorite places in the whole world, Cleveland, Ohio, AI Wrestling, and Rahway, New Jersey, Pro Wrestling Syndicate. Cleveland was something else. Because when you put Eddie Kingston, Curt Hawkins, Tyson Dukes, Grado, and Dennis Stamp in a locker room with all others, I mean, just a whole cast of characters. And Grado and Dennis Stamp together was amazing. You know, a lot of you, if you watched the Vice documentary, which kind of was the start of the Grado phenomenon, you saw that basically Grado became the sensation that he did by mocking Dennis Stamp or paying tribute to Dennis Stamp, whichever it may be. And obviously, hopefully a lot of you know what a big super fan that he is. So when that world could come together, and it was so cool that AIW made that world come together, and it was something else. I know AIW has a lot of Instagrams and Vines up and YouTube of that situation. Dennis got in the ring, first time booked since 1991. He was in such good spirits, high spirits. And I know he had talked to the promoters, John Thorne and Chandler Biggins, about how low he had been recently. So when they called him up to book him, first it was hard for him to believe. Second, he thought it was a rib. And they were like, no, man, there's a whole generation out there that wants to see you. And he got booked. Grado and Dick Justice tagged with him, and it was a fun sight to be seen. I had a really good match against Chris Sabin, one of the most underrated wrestlers that a lot of you guys can appreciate. Sabin, very good. Good match for me. Down, I'm slim and trim, so I'm able to move a little bit better. That's exciting, keeping up with Chris himself. And then the next day was one of the coolest moments in my life as I wrestled Jushin Thunder Liger in the main event of Pro Wrestling Syndicate. And there was one story that came out of there. First of all, this was another Buff Bagwell situation, where Jushin Thunder Liger just came in. He had no clue who I was, sadly, and not sadly, but why should he know who I am? Over 50 years old, I think, at this point. And, you know, I think he's just doing shows to do shows because, you know, his career is winding down. And I think it's just cool to see him in different countries or continents wrestle live. So that's very cool, but still goes very hard, works very hard. But, you know, he didn't know who I was, as I did not expect him to. And just after the match, I could see on his face just like, whoa, I did not expect you to be, I don't want to say that good, but like, you know, I don't think he just went into this random promotion wrestling. And then all of a sudden, like, wow, like this guy is good. And I had fun and I didn't have to like worry about anything and I was safe and I had a good time and it was a good reaction and the people had a good time and it was a good showing for him. And I'm glad that I could give that to him. And I remember you go back, you know, this was maybe a couple years ago where I talked about a match I had with Buff Bagwell where basically he had no clue who I was. And then he came back and he told me that was the best match he had ever had in his whole life, which is a great story. I can't find it exactly, but I'm sure if you go back in the archives, same. I don't know if the best match that Jushin Thunder Liger ever had, but it was a fun match and I loved doing it. I did want to share a story. I remember back wrestling for IWC for Norm Connors in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he had brought in Dick Togo and Akuta Hidaka, and I remember I was supposed to wrestle Togo, but I think the SATs squashed him in New York the night before, so I wrestled Hidaka instead. And I remember, you know, bless Punk's heart, but I remember he was so in love with Japanese wrestling at the time that I think as I wrestled Hidaka, I slapped him and I said, go back to Japan. And I remember Punk was so upset with me, and he was just like, How can you disrespect a Japanese wrestler like that? And especially Hidaka, who's so coveted over there. And I was just like, I don't know, man. I was just wrestling. And, you know, I think that's just part of, like, I don't know. Maybe he was sticking up for Japanese wrestling at the time in a different mindset. Now I'm sure he doesn't give a shit. But fast forward 10 years later, maybe 11 years later, and I'm wrestling Jushin Thunder Liger, who's a couple steps more legendary than Hidaka over in Japan and across the world. And I find myself in a situation where I have Jushin Liger in an armbar and I have a free hand and I see one of those horns. And that horn is right by my private area. And I think back to when Punk was like, how could you be so disrespectful when you slapped a man and said, go back to Japan? And I look down as I have a free hand and I have a Liger horn right in my crotch that looks like a penis. Yes, you know exactly what I'm going for. And at this stage in my career, almost just like that stage back there when you just don't give a fuck and you want to have the best time, I threw respect out the window for the sake of the match. And I jerked off that Jushin Thunder Liger horn. And I got probably the best reaction in the match. And that's when, you know, my theory of wrestling, I think always has stayed true, is do what comes natural, don't second guess yourself, and have fun out there. And it's going to be a fun, fun ride. I don't think Jushin Liger minded. I didn't mind. I enjoyed it. And whether I disrespected the man or not, I think it was all for the sake of wrestling. And as Tommy Dreamer once told on this very podcast, it's not gay, it's pro wrestling. For real. All right, song of the week this week is by a band called Vader Bomb. I've been literally waiting to have Vader on the show to play this song. It's about time. It's called Vader Time. That kind of went together, didn't it? Enjoy it. We'll be back with the man himself, Big Van Vader.
Valerian will fuck you up. Vader Song will fuck you up. Jokeslam will fuck you up. Vader Bomb will fuck you up. It's Vader Time. It's Vader Time. It's Vader Time. Time, 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 time. Sin hits and knock his eye out, but he just kept going. Just kept throwing. Stan Hansen knocked his eye out, but he just kept going.
Go away.
He couldn't see a thing, but he just kept throwing.
Watch it.
100 pounds comes crushing down. 200 pounds comes crushing down. 300 pounds comes crushing down. 400 pounds comes crushing down.
Cool.
You got it. Yeah.
I appreciate you giving me a ride from where are we flying to? Charlotte?
Am I a good, how am I as a road partner?
Very good.
Yeah.
I wasn't surprised at all. But I flew from Denver to Chicago, met you, and then we flew into, it was a good flight, concerned because I thought it'd be, you know, with the weather was so bad, cloudy.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be really bumpy.
With a chance of meatballs.
And it scares me, the turbulence. Wow. I mean, I get white-knuckled. And I remember in my Japan days, and we'd get some really serious turbulence. And even the WCW days, never bothered me. And then suddenly took a couple years off and started doing it again. And the turbulence is just a little shake. And I'm grabbing the chair and tightening the seatbelt. Yeah.
Well, what was the most you weighed as a wrestler?
Legitimate, probably... Probably 430.
430.
Yeah.
And like flying all over the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And but you know, in those days, I always flew first class.
They always flew you first class.
Yeah.
There had to be one time where they're like, sorry, Mr. Vader, first class is booked up.
Well, I was, you know, in my early days in Japan, I think I was going business, but...
Which is better than first class, I think, right?
No.
Oh, does it go first class, business, economy?
Yeah, okay. Business is good. Very good, but it's...
But you're not tightly squoze.
Business class is the bed now. At first, there were just big chairs, like in the 80s going over to Japan. And then it got to the point where you had your own little TV and you could watch private DVDs, your private choice of movies, and a great meal, a great meal. And... it would actually lay down into a bed.
Yeah.
So I would take my shoes off and
so piece of cake. At 4:30 you're still doing okay.
You got your shoes off and you're laying on your side and you got 4 or 5 pillows and watching a movie. And
did you not hear like horror stories of like Andre the Giant maybe on a plane? Or
you know what, that would have been in his day,
it'd have been awful.
It would have been terrible.
But never, you were always okay.
Well, I was big, but never had the height to worry about. I mean,
yeah.
I take my shoes off and I'm pretty average.
Right.
You know? Well, it must have been, you imagine, you've been to Japan. Mm-hmm. And I know you work for NOAA. And you were telling me some of those bedrooms they're not just small, they're very small.
Very small.
I've walked into some where weren't much bigger than a closet.
I couldn't even imagine how you'd fit into the bathroom, because the bathrooms are even smaller and the doors are smaller.
Yeah.
And you're 4'30".
And then I always thought of Andre, thinking, my God, isn't... And I heard stories they would have to put him at special hotels where the boys were staying in the little,
Right.
The little travel, in Tokyo they always took care of the boys, especially with Andre and Stan and whomever with Inoki or Baba. So they always probably put them up. I did hear a rumor that Stan was so over that he had his own hotel in Tokyo.
They love their big Americans, right?
Oh Jesus,
loved them.
Yeah, I mean Stan, Brody, Andre. I mean, good Lord, yeah. Brody was a god over there. I mean, as over as Stan was, and that's as over as you get.
So whatever they want, they got.
Brody was more over.
Yeah.
More over than Stan.
Did they take advantage?
I can't really. I mean, I didn't work. I came in, and I guess in a small way, once I got over with the helmet and debuted with Inoki, and Inoki hadn't been beaten, my God, almost a decade, 7, 8 years.
Right.
And he was undefeated, and
So I know your debut, they brought the helmet out, it was made. You were placed into the gimmick, correct?
Well, but here's the story on the helmet. It was, they had the helmet made, and it was just, the eyes lit up, and there was a wireless mic on the mouth, so you could actually talk to the people, and I would, say Japanese phrases,
No way you knew Japanese phrases.
Eventually
someone threw them at you, right?
And they told me what to say. Say this and, say this. And, a minor bird can mimic stuff. So I could, sure. And, you would say Gambatti and Yoroshiku. And, your Gambatti is what you're going to fight your hardest. And
okay.
Fight your ass off. And Yoroshiku, you're going to do your best. And you got to know those words, right?
Ine, that's what I learned, which means okay.
Ine. Ine, yeah.
I don't know the other ones. I know Ichiban.
Ichiban is your number one, and Gambatti. Gambatti is a good one.
Okay, can I have that maybe?
Shit.
I'm just asking, not can I have that, but I might steal that. Sorry. No, I'm not asking permission to give it to me. I might steal it though.
Steal it, Gambatti. It's Gunbatte, Gambatti. And Yoroshiku, Sumo-san. And they like that. You're actually speaking, Yoroshiku, I'm going to do my best for you on the way out.
Right.
Fight my hardest. And they really like that, yeah.
So, okay, so they built up the thing.
I heard they actually brought Sid, because, Sid just, my God, his prime, the way he looked, he had the best look in wrestling ever, I think.
Yeah.
He had this kind of this rough, good-looking face. I mean, he had movie star looks, the blonde, curly hair, tan, and this body,
And as a kid, I was like, oh, he's a great wrestler, because he looked, I'm like 10 or whatever. I'm like, Sid Vicious is the best, because he looks like he looks. But,
the look was unbelievable. So, the Inoki looked at him, and, I think there was something that, they brought him over for a few weeks, and...
Wasn't to his liking.
Well, I'm not going to say that. I mean, Sid's a good friend of mine, but I just think they couldn't see him doing, in those days we were doing 25-minute matches, 20-minute matches,
okay.
18-minute matches, 15, every night. Jeez, I look back and I think, at 400 pounds to be doing, night in and night out, 20-plus minutes a night, and it seemed easy. It seemed normal. Just a little stiff. I mean, if you look at Sid, he's not going to get a scholarship at a major university playing basketball.
Maybe softball.
Well, yeah.
Right?
He's got the power and he can hit the ball a long way. But you know what I'm saying? You got little 6-foot guys that are really fluid athletes. And these guys, they just don't say, hey, I'm going to be a wrestler and get in the gym. They start it from when they're, 8, 9, 10? And
the Japanese guys.
And they're really the best of the best. They're, at least that's the way it used to be. I haven't been over in a while, but so they're trained and they're weeded out, and the best get up. You know, guys like in my day, Fujinami and Choshu and Inoki, and you know, they were filtered out from dojo to dojo to dojo, and you know, they kept moving on because they were the best. And then like in Noah, Kobashi and Akiyama and Mizawa, I really think in his prime, he could be the best wrestler of all time. Mizawa in his prime was, because when he was, Jesus, when he was running Noah and was before he passed, you know, he was overweight and smoking 4 packs a day, and he'd go out there with me and God, we'd do 20 minutes and just right. beat the hell out of each other. And I thought, man, this guy's talented.
Was he smoking back in the day?
Oh, shit.
They all do, huh?
Yeah, they all did.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And he was smoking and just go out there and tear it up. Something he'd done.
Right.
And, you know, you would think about, well, I've been in a match with Sting. I've been in a match with Heartbreak Kid and the very best. You know, I don't think it gets much better than that in America.
So it wasn't for Sid. Maybe Sid wasn't the best to play the Vader character.
Wait, we go back to he's a little stiff athletically, you know. And then to top it off, he's 6'8". And thank you for bringing me back on track. And these guys are 6 foot. So
you like how I did that?
Huh?
You like how I did?
Yeah, that's great. You've done this before. And then I think even Warrior went over in his beginning. And right height, you know, so they basically got a smaller Sid. You know, say, well, Sid would have looked good under that thing, but too tall and not quite the athlete we're looking for. And so now you've got a shorter version of Sid, right, in the Warrior. And, you know, it was, with all due respect, he's a Hall of Famer, and you got to give it to him. But it just, I think the same type of thing happened. So they got this fat kid that, well, was an athlete. And, you know, I was, you know, and hey, I'm going to toot my, I was a high school All-American and then a college All-American, so I was athletic.
Yeah, there's something about playing those kind of sports, which, right, because, I mean, not that I was at the level that you were, but I did play a division, I was good enough to play Division I A ball.
There you go.
And when you go in, and if you add that to the love of wrestling, now I'm not sure if that, I don't know your background enough to know if you had that love of wrestling as a kid, and maybe we'll get into that. But when you put those two together, and I know, like, Jim Ross would always say, like, you know, he loves these athletes, but you also have to kind of enjoy the art of wrestling. Also.
You know what? Initially, I enjoyed being in front of people because I got used to that from a very early age. But again, getting back, so, and then Masa Saito, I think I would have got the nod for the Vader gimmick even sooner, but Masa was in prison, and he was the booker for Inoki, right?
And for screwing up that McDonald's with Ken Patera?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he got out of prison. See, he would have saw me much sooner, but he was in jail. And that's you know, not talking bad, because Masa started all this for me. But his first night out, I mean, he got out of jail. I mean, my understanding is like that morning.
Went right to the arena?
Yeah, and flew to Vegas and wrestled. You know?
Amazing.
And he was jacked. I mean, he was like 300 pounds and just had been lifting weights. And big dude, big, big, strong guy. And it was him and Sabisco and someone else, another Japanese kid, big, tall one, 6'6", I can't remember his name. But and then myself and Greg Gagne and Scott Hall, and six men.
And so he didn't know who you were, right?
No, and I went out there.
Wrestled with you.
See, I was competing. You know, obviously Scott was over. Scott Hall was over. And Razor is obviously a Hall of Famer. He's excellent. And he's one of my favorite all-time people. Greg, you know. So when I got my chance in, I just stayed in. I did a big comeback on everyone. Took a shot, sold, and made another comeback. You don't do that, right?
Right.
And during this, and they got on me. Scott said, "Wow, Scott said you just went in and bogarted." And I said, "What do you mean? I was playing stupid, like I didn't know what I was doing."
Was the idea to impress Saito?
Just to get over.
Just, you know, in general.
Just in general.
With Saito or with the crowd and everything?
Just with the crowd.
Okay.
And you know, I was just, hey, this is a, you know, televised match, and I'm in with all these great wrestlers, and
Let me just stay in the whole time.
Well, it was like, I was green enough to get away with it. Like, maybe he didn't know.
Yeah.
But I kind of knew. Right. You know? And so I sold and made a comeback and sold again, made another comeback. I don't know. But in that deal, I picked up Masa for a slam because I thought he's too heavy. And I just was so excited. Next thing I know, he's over my head. He was over my head. So I should have just pressed him. And he was legit, you know, 280, 285, and just pressed him about three or four times, brought him back, and then took him down and threw him over my shoulder and did a running power. And, yeah, so it impressed him that I was able to move and then have that kind of strength. And then Otto Vance had come over, and this is a legit story, gave Vern Gagne $30,000 for me.
For you?
For me. Because he needed, the CWA was running hot, and they ran in mainly Austria, Germany, Italy, you know. But we had crowds on a nightly basis of, you know, 2,500, 3,000.
When you were doing CWA. Yeah. So he paid Vern $30,000 for you.
30 straight up.
And then on top paid your wages and fees.
Well, he just gave Vern, in other words, I'm really interested in this kid. And I'm looking for a big American to come over and really fight him. And that was the whole idea. And what I would do is I would get over with the other guys, and then, you know, they did tournaments. So every tournament, you'd have win, losses, and points. And mm-hmm. then finally in the finals, I would get with Otto, or even in the semis or whatever. But it was always the big match because he was the big baby face and I was the big bad guy American. And yeah, so 30 grand wasn't much money because he would, you know.
It's big business.
You have to understand,
there.
he had a tent that held, what, 3,500 people. And all the beer and dogs sales was his. You got 3,000 people later and drinking beer and they
and that's 7 days a week also.
Yeah,
right?
Every night. Yeah. Every night a tournament, and you would do a tournament for 2 months. It was a lot of money.
Sure.
So that was nothing. 30 grand was nothing.
Yeah.
And
so Saito sees you. He sees you're an athlete.
But I leave. But so he couldn't find me. He went back to Japan and told Inoki, "Hey, I've got the Vader guy." And couldn't find me.
But I can't find him.
He's gone. In other words, he wasn't.
And there is no internet, so we can't email him.
Well, no text phones, no.
Right.
No. So, yeah, we were limited, and I didn't leave a forwarded address at my, you know. It was just, hey.
That's how it would have worked, right? Like, a forwarding address.
It would have, yeah. Yeah. And so I'm in Europe, and he said he was looking for me for 6 months, and finally they found me. In other words, they didn't want to go over to Vern and let them know they were trying to steal me.
Right.
So if they would have called Vern and said, "Hey, where is this guy?"
Yeah.
Right. But they were trying to steal me, so they didn't want
to. There was a method
Vern.
To it,
yeah.
Of course.
And the Japanese are honorable, but you know they're businessmen like everyone else. Yeah. So, and then he sent Masao Hattori over to Europe, and he watched a couple nights, and we stayed. They had bought me a BMW, and I'm not talking about nothing fancy, but it was a very fast car, do like 160 miles an hour, those Autobahn cars. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was cool. You could get on the Autobahn and just floor it. Yeah. Go as fast as you want. You'd be going 160 miles an hour and a Porsche would come up behind you and go beep beep and just I mean, just pretty soon it was a dot.
Right.
You go, fuck, this is great. Yeah. I mean, you could speed every day. It was just, I thought it was great. You know, I'd have a couple of beers and get on the Autobahn and go 20 miles one way and come back. And nice. Yeah, it was a blast. So Masao comes over and he says, well, we were at the, met him at the tent. And he says, where are you staying? I said, right here. And he said, what do you mean? I said, right here. I had a trailer parked next to the tent, fenced, you know, inside the fence. And he said, you live right here? This is the parking lot. Your son and your wife, you live right. He couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, it's you know.
Well, he's been living in a dojo for 20 years probably, right?
Well, no, he had a house in New York, and he you know, would travel back and forth to Japan, so he couldn't believe it. He said, this is where the people park, and he said, they piss right here, and you live right here.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, well, the fence is there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And we closed the blinds, and they don't know I live in there. So anyways, it worked out fine.
But they don't know won't hurt him, right?
Well, you know what? There was no travel to work. You just
and that's what you always. I always heard that about
car
Germany.
And you'd get up and go shopping.
Right.
And then go to the gym and then come back and eat and then sleep. And
that's why the people love Germany, right? I hear those stories that it's like you're in the same place. You're not traveling. Sounds amazing.
You really enjoy it. You've got like in Graz and Vienna. Vienna was fantastic in the summer. We stayed in a Campingplatz of beautiful rivers and park, and they had a big giant stainless steel pool, and the girls all wore no tops. And
the good life.
And we would just wake up and take a swim and barbecue lunch, and
very cool. So they found you in Germany, and they said, "Well, come on, we got to get you."
Well, Otto was over there whining and dining them, thinking, you know, and
they want to bring Otto. You think?
No, I don't know.
Did he think that they? He thought that they.
I know. I don't know. I'm not going to say that, but he was given the red carpet. And next thing you know, I got him on the phone and said, "Hey, they've offered me this much money, and I can't do an 8-month season with you not and pass up this much money." And he just,
Did it break his heart?
Well, it pissed him off. Yeah, because he said, "Well, good, work for them when you're done with me." And I said, "I don't know, I do an 8-month season with you." And so it was just, it was business.
Yeah, and you were young, pretty, because those AWA days, you were pretty young. Like you said, green.
I tell you what, man.
When I see you on ESPN Classic.
When I debuted, if you ever watched that debut tape of me in the Sumo Palace with Inoki, and everyone says, read the comments on that video, the YouTube video, and they said, "Wow, he must have been 340 or 350. Or I was 385 pounds, just moving." Because they said, look how fast he's moving. And I look at that and I go, wow.
But you were young, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so how do you know... business-wise, to be like, because to leave Otto like that is a bold move. But so young wrestlers are sometimes intimidated. But you knew to be like, business-wise, sorry, man, I gotta go do this.
Well, it just, my wife wanted to come home and she wanted to buy a house, and with that contract, we could put that contract up. And
you knew you had to do it.
Well, yeah, yeah. She wanted to get off the road and. You can go to Japan and come home.
Right.
You can go to Japan. And that was a
Did you think about wrestling politics, though?
I was just thinking about the money and feeding my family. But
okay.
Really, in Europe and in Japan, there's no politics involved.
Okay.
Not then.
But you're leaving Otto before the 8 months.
Yeah, but I'm talking about politics is when you got Ric Flair breathing down your neck and Hulk Hogan breathing down your neck and you're the, legitimate number one bad guy in the company. You're talking about WCW, and,
right?
And they're coming in, and they don't like it, and things definitely change there. So, Hogan, Flair didn't have the push that Hogan did. Let's face it, but when Hogan got there, he ran the show.
And you saw a political master, probably.
Exactly.
Right.
Got schooled.
And especially.
I just thought my work would speak for itself.
Because of the Japanese culture that you've been involved in so long?
In other words, it didn't matter. You didn't have to go talk to the boss or go negotiate a finish. You trusted them because, hey, if I put 20 minutes in, tear the fucking house down. And
that's out. But
it didn't work that way.
Right.
It was America. And, going back, that's, either I should have stayed in Japan and I could have signed probably a big long-term contract, and signed a 20-week contract for, I don't want to speculate on how much money, but a lot of money, and for 20 weeks, and, just been on salary, and then came home and worked independence and made a lot more money than I would have made in the WCW, and never got involved in
have
that
to deal with
political
that.
Situation.
How long were you with New Japan before you made that decision? It was New Japan, correct?
Well, it was the same type thing with, Otto's paid me this much money, and Japan's paid me this much money, and WCW's paid me this much money.
Right.
And it just kept getting bigger.
Well,
bigger.
I don't know. I'm kind of. How long were you in New Japan before WCW started knocking?
I don't really remember. It wasn't too long. 2 or 3 years.
2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get.
Enough to get, 3 world titles. And,
yeah.
And in retrospect, because I had to. The leverage, because they knew what was going on. I probably could have went to Inoki and cut up one of the best deals in the history. And
And what, you made the decision? Who tried to lure you over from WCW?
It was Ross and Rhodes, Dusty. Because I was, what I was doing was I was doing $2,000 shots with them.
With WCW? In my,
your spare time.
Okay. So you'd come back from a tour and you'd work?
I'd come back, get 20 days off, and 10 of them I'd book with them.
What drove you to book days instead of just hanging out at home?
$1,000 a night.
So the money drove you.
Was, yeah. You know.
And you said you graduated with a business degree, right?
Yeah.
I graduated with a business degree.
Did you?
Yes. So I always feel like sometimes the business aspect drives us a little more than it should.
It may have been the wrong decision. You know, you think of a longevity, peace of mind. I had a spot there that was undeniable, and just stay in shape, stay strong, and work. You know, Noki was extremely fair, and anything I wanted to do outside of those 20 weeks, he wouldn't have cared, as, you know, as long as I wasn't jobbing.
Right.
See, because I could have stayed there and worked if I wanted to. Come home, hey, I'm tired. I'm not going to work this time home. Or I could have had independent bookings up the ass, you know. It was a very good situation.
Right.
And to get into that political environment, and, you know, it became, there was a lot of snakes in the grass, let's put it that way.
Are you, so obviously, I get the idea that you're not into the politics, it hurts. Like, as growing up, or even in, let's say even in football, did you find that you had to deal with that kind of stuff?
No, you didn't. See, football was political free, and as was Japan wrestling, as was European wrestling. It's just the best got on the field, period. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was it. That was the bottom.
What about, like, would you say you're not like a kind of like a social dude, I guess? How's the sociability?
I think, I guess limited. I think I'm misunderstood in a lot of ways, but I think it was more suited for my character and my personality to be in that type of environment. You know, it's like, hey, what you do in the ring matters here. Not
Japan.
Not, yeah.
Right.
Not what you do in the bar after work.
Yeah.
And
you had a grandeur of, well, I guess money in the deal with WCW, but did you see, like, I can easily translate this Japanese style to American wrestling?
Well, I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't. I mean, that's exactly what I did.
Of course.
That's what they told me. Dusty said, I want you to be Vader. That guy we saw on tape, that's what we want. It wasn't like I was asking permission to do that. It was what I was told to do. So I just did it, and it worked.
Right.
And obviously, Steve Borden, if Steve had gotten in a ring with me and competed for 20 minutes, then nobody had any room to complain.
So people know that, like, you're a rough dude in there, right?
Well, you know what? I've always,
or you've been tagged that.
Yeah, I've always, I don't know. It's see, when the way I started in AWA with, and I'm this big green guy, and they say, well, put him with Stan Hansen. And, you know, Stan just beat me mercifully. One of my first matches with him, and he boot you so hard and clothesline you so hard, and you're just getting shit knocked out of you. And then from there, I went to Brody, and Brody was worse. I mean, just beatings. And I didn't say a word and just say, hey, this is it. This is what you go through, right? Brody hit me so hard with a chair. It was in Milwaukee, obviously, and the chair was put in Milwaukee Chair Company. He hit me so hard in the back, knocked me out face down. The imprint of, it was a big red spot, and it said Milwaukee Chair Company. I remember Kurt Hennig.
He was reading your head?
Well, he just said, guys, come here, swear to God. Yeah, everyone's looking at my back, and you could read it, the imprint. He hit me that hard. It knocked me cold. And he had to pick me up to boot me to finish me. And then Jerry Blackwell. And Jerry wasn't as mean as those guys, but still a pretty rough guy. And Jerry's, you know, big 400-pounder. But he started to teach me and started saying, hey, not me, but anybody else. You know, fuck Leon, you're the biggest, strongest guy here. Just beat everybody up, you know? Could they do that to you if you didn't want them to? I said, no one could. Not Stan, not Brody, nobody. Shit, I was bench pressing 600, and I could take 365 behind my neck and jump press it 15 times.
Now, do you think Jerry Blackwell said this because he believed it, or he said it because he didn't want you to hit him? So
no, Jerry wasn't afraid of nobody, and no one fucked with Jerry, because excuse my language, but
no, please.
If believe me, he had a gun everywhere he went.
He was a tough dude. I guess I don't know that much about Jerry Black.
No, though. Yeah, he wasn't tough. He just hurt you.
Okay,
just flat out, just nobody. I don't care, Brody. Nobody got in a ring and disrespected Jerry, and they could have because he's a big guy. But it was, what are you gonna do after the match when you're in your car and it's dark in the parking lot? That's the thing. He had respect, and he was very smart, very good worker, and you know, just a good dude. So
from an early point, that was kind of instilled. Like, that's how you, if you can do it, huh?
Yeah, and so, you know, again, maybe, looking back, had I stayed in Japan, in other words, they were offering me the moon when they heard I was thinking about going, and we'll pay you this much a year, and you only have to, we'll sign 20 weeks, but you only have to do 12 of them. Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
You know, we have to put it on paper, but, you know, you'll do 12, 13 weeks a year, and you'll make this much money. No one's ever made that much money here. Nobody, not Stan, nobody. And you can go home and work as much as you want with anybody. Independence, that probably was the deal of the century.
Right.
And probably should have took it.
Hindsight. But you were a made man in Japan. A legendary Japanese career, I would like to think. And it started off in that match with Inoki, yeah? Like, you were made right away. Do you feel that way?
Well, I don't know if anyone's had a better debut than that. I mean, you know, that was my first match. A lot of people say, well, that wasn't his first match. And it was. It was my... I was supposed to debut for Baba. And here's the second thing. I know Otto paid $30,000 for me. I know that for a fact. Because he came over and said, you know, we want this guy. You know, he's green, but we'll train him. And you know, Vern was all business. Well, you ain't just having him, but pay me. And I Otto told me that over beers. Masa was so impressed with me by the time he finally got me. I was scheduled, Bockwinkel was working for Baba, and I had got to know Bockwinkel from the AWA, and he had booked me a January shot after my tour with Otto. Masao had come over, and I said, you know, this all sounds great, what you're talking about, the deal, the contract, and all that, but I've got a booking, so I'll do the booking with Baba. And he said, no, you can't. I said, I've already committed. I'm going to do that, and if you want to talk, we'll talk. Inoki contacted Baba, and bought my contract, and I went over and worked for them instead. So,
wow. And you don't know that number.
Pretty. No, I don't.
pretty high, maybe.
But they had, Baba was loaded with, you know, big name Americans, so
mm-hmm.
To me, I'm an unknown quantity, right? Baba had never seen me, just booked me based on what Bockwinkel had said, and really I would have got buried over there.
Right, and they had, New Japan had all these...
New Japan didn't have any American.
No, but they had this big idea of what they wanted to do with you, but and you no were their Americans. Little secret.
And no Americans.
They had no Americans.
They were strictly Japanese crew, and I kind of broke the barrier on that. And there was a few, like Owen, I think, was going over a couple weeks, and a couple other guys, you know, but in that first two or three match role. And so, but, you know, had I went to Baba, it's like, you know, Stan and Brody, you know, they were gods for Baba, and then all the other names, Snuka and Race and DiBiase. I mean, the list just went on and on. You would have.
So, smart move.
Well, no, it wasn't mine. It was just, I was going to honor my word.
Well, I mean, it's maybe smart move by them. I don't, or as fate would have it, it worked out well.
It worked out really well for me. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You said that later, you told me that later, you know, Stan Hansen took you in a role, like was tagging with you. Kind of, do you feel that he took you under his wing?
Well, no, not at that time, because I was...
Or maybe passed on the role of the next, hey, you're the next,
in other words,
Japanese bruiser.
Things weren't working out were the E for me, and I had contacted Stan, and, you know, his knees were starting to bother him, and he was doing 30 weeks a year forever, and just, you know, that's big money, 30 weeks at what he was making. Plus the 20% tax credit. I mean, Stan made big, big money. I called him. He said, yeah, I think I can make this work because I'm looking for a tag partner. And he said, I don't want to. We had already did the Tokyo Dome match and, you know, where the eye came out and all that. And he said, I don't want to fight you every night.
Yeah.
But it would be a good partner for him. You know, it would, you know. So that's the basis on which I got out of WWE. and took that spot with Stan, and we were tag champs in a couple of weeks, and we had a good run. And you know, it prolonged his career, and it got me over because I'm wow. You know, your tag world champs was Stan Hansen.
Yeah.
And you're not a subordinate role. You know, we were dead even. So.
Right. The WWE didn't work out. People say, right, and you tell me, because I could say what people say, but...
You know, the bottom line is I just wasn't allowed to be Vader. For the first time in my career, there was people there that, wrestlers that had, you know, had ultimate say. And see, like with Hulk, it started with Hulk. With Flair, if you look at the world title match, I was, you know, I didn't... In other words, Flair was doing jobs for the WWE. And then I got the world title and got over in WWE. And then he came back. And he was politicking for that title back. And I told powers to be that, you know, I didn't, you know, I would rather give the title to someone else. Anybody.
Anybody.
Well, not
the
anybody.
Gambler.
No, that's not fair. So Flair was still pretty good then.
No, but I get it.
But Sting or Simmons or... Somebody.
Yeah.
And then let Flair go after him. And I said, that's not where the money is. And I said, well, you know, I'm not going to do this. And you end up doing it, right? And it just, to me, you know, Flair was, he was pretty frail at that time, 220, and I was like 415, and I was just killing everybody. And, I had to bring my match so far down, and it was still brutal for him. I mean, if you look at that interview that he did, and... You know, his face was purple. It's been like Lesnar fighting an older Cena.
Right.
Like if Cena was in 55 and Lesnar now, it, you know.
I get it.
I was so big and strong, I had to, you know, and I didn't like doing that. And then Hogan, the same thing. You know, he was pretty frail at that time, too.
And then did someone sell you the bill of goods? Like, hey, come over to here, it's the promised land.
Well, yeah, it was 5-year extension on the contract that I had, which never, you know, in other words, okay, I'll do this. And then after I do this and I get the contract extension.
At WCW?
Yeah.
Right.
Then.
But at WWE, someone was like, come over here, it's the promised land.
No. That was basically after I was done with WWE, I was home getting ready to go back to Japan, and then I got a call.
Okay.
And that was all positive, and, you know, they paid me a lot of money and came in and, you know, things just didn't work out. So.
Yeah. There's, I mean, you got to know these stories of there's enhancement talent, and then they read who they're wrestling tonight, and they're wrestling Vader, right?
I don't know, man.
Well, I mean, the stories of, like, maybe. People feared, right? Feared to wrestle you.
I always gave, how did I used to say that?
You had a stock line for it, huh?
Well, I took what I gave. In other words, you know, if I clothesline somebody, man, I would take one back.
And, yeah, but not some guy who's...
Took what I gave and gave what I took.
Right, but if there's some guy on the undercard who's there to make you look good, he ain't clotheslining you.
No.
I'm not talking about the superstars. I'm talking about, like, you got some enhancement matches. Someone's doing the job tonight.
Someone said that. I mean, I think it was Ron. Ron said, you know, Vader Flat gets the job done. Ron Simmons, you know. Every night he goes out there and works his ass off. And... you know, every night he's the main event with somebody.
Yeah. And but you got a local night, town guy.
Every night the crowd is full. And, you know, I've been in some matches with Ron where, you know, I'd catch him and, boy, he'd catch me and nothing was said. And that's the way I grew up.
Yeah.
And same with Sting, you know. Obviously, with Sting, you worked a little lighter, but Sting would haul off and just hit you and just let you know.
Yeah, you like the physicality, though.
You have to admit, during that time where it was Vader and Sting and Vader and Foley and Vader and Simmons and Vader and whoever, it was different. It was real. And people say, you know, that's what got me watching wrestling was I watched the Vader match. I thought, wow, this is a real fight.
Yeah. Do you, as an athlete, like in an NFL game, like hitting, you know what I'm saying? Did he feel like it got you into the action? Like, I get it. Like, some people need that to really start to get that physicality going, to get the blood going, to get everything going.
It's just, you know what? It's the way I was brought up. I mean, over in Europe was very rough for him. And
say that again.
When I started off in the AWA. I told you, and you have to go back to the history. I mean, I started off with Stan because look at the size of this guy. He's 400 pounds, and he's just scary strong. Yeah. No one wanted to work with me. Give him Stan. Stan Shaw, I'll work with him. Shit. Yeah. And just beat it out of me, right? I said, just listen to what I say. You know, so it was like clothesline, elbow, you know, fight back. And didn't know what I was doing. And then Brody and then Blackwell. And then finally I caught my wind after Jerry had talked to me a little bit and started dishing some of the shit back. And this is how it was. Like the first night, I couldn't see straight. I remember I took a boot in that chair from Brody and went, this is serious sport. This is, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the way it is, right? You take a boot in that chair from Brody, and if you don't think you're in a competitive world, then you got somewhere to go. You need to go somewhere else, what they need to say. And then you go over to Europe, and these guys are fighting for their spots. And I'm the new kid on the block, and, you know, I fought my way up to the top through all that stuff. Then you go to Japan, and these guys are kicking you in the face as hard as they can. Go to WCW, and you realize, okay, let's tone it down, but still it's just a slightly milder version of what I did in Japan, in Europe. The WWE, it wasn't my best time, but you know, I drew money. I mean, everyone I was with, and in other words, when I stopped drawing money, that's, you know, I made a call and got out of there, and then went back, and I don't know, I had 3 or 4 years with 2 or 3 Triple Crowns over, a couple tag titles with Stan, and then went to Noah. I got back to my roots,
right?
And then finished on top.
Yeah, I like how we're Noah brothers. It's like the fraternity. I mean, I know it's kind of late in this to get into, but like, you started with AWA, is that correct?
Yeah, I went to Europe,
but the very very start, because you won a Super Bowl with the Rams.
Yeah,
right.
I was a high school All-American and a college All-American, number one ranked center in the country. Got drafted in the NFL. I would have played 15 years. I mean, I was 6'4 and 325 and just
ready to go.
Well, just, you know, really lateral, you know, great feet laterally. I don't know if you'd understand this, but if you're center and you got a nose guard and then you slide the nose guard to the front side to call that a one technique, you have to snap that ball and cut him off front side. So that takes talent to cut off. And
I played Division I football.
Yeah, I got it. That's really hard to do.
Sure.
To cut off an NFL defensive lineman who's in the play side gap, and you got to cut him off. So, that's,
you're an athlete. You're an athlete. Yeah,
that's the point I made it earlier.
Yeah,
with the other two guys who were.
So, I know your NFL career got cut short.
I mean, ruptured patellar tendon. Yeah,
was wrestling just like a next option, or did someone bring wrestling to you, or were you like, fuck, I've always loved wrestling. Now I can get into wrestling.
My high school, no, junior high PE coach, he was a wrestler.
Yeah?
He wrestled under a mask. Italian dude. Mr. Something.
And he would be like, hey guys, you know I'm the masked wrestler?
Yeah, come on down. And we'd catch a bus and go downtown LA and watch him. And
so he wasn't shy to tell the world that he was a wrestler, even though he's under a mask.
Well, he did it on the weekends. Whatever, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, or Friday.
Did he say you have to keep it quiet? I'm under a mask?
Nah, he didn't.
He's just so proud of it.
Big, you know, burly-chested Italian guy, about 5'10", 240, you know. And he did a great job. It was fun.
Did it always just stick in your head then, the wrestling? So when it came down to it? So when the NFL career ended, you're like, oh, masked Italian guy.
Well, I took some money and got in real estate that I had saved from the NFL and did real well. Built some homes and I should have stayed in real estate because I got my license. And again, there's another regret. Should have, could have. You know, because I was making money in the 80s in real estate and knew how to do it.
But you said you like to be in front of a crowd.
Yeah, that called me back. I just got bored.
Were you like, I get it, you're selling houses, you're doing real estate, but you're like, fuck, I need that rush again?
It was me, yeah. I
sold yourself on it.
Sold myself and got back in the gym and got back in shape and just kept getting bigger and bigger, and you know, shit. Next thing you know, I was gone.
And who did you run to?
At first, it was just going to be, well, I'll go to the camp, learn how to do it, and just do it occasionally.
Do it on the weekends, like your gym teacher. Yeah.
And that didn't work. So
well, when Saito sees you, you gotta. Yeah. So you went through the brutal camp, right? I mean, you hear that they're brutal. I don't know.
They are. Yeah.
Who was in your class?
Brad Riggins had a camp in Minnesota.
Of course.
And what I did is just, I went down, I got a pair of boots on with 2-inch heels on it, and I got, I think it was 400 pounds, and a big cowboy hat. And I remember AWA was sold out, like 10,000 people, and Brody was there. And I remember I just walked in their locker room with this cowboy hat on and, you know, this big giant fucker and 2-inch heels on it. And I just walked in and stared at everybody. And they're like, who, you know, this is somebody. It's got to be somebody.
Yeah. So
it wasn't that they were afraid. It's just, this has to be somebody.
Is he here from big and New York? Is he here from Texas?
Somebody, where is this guy? He's got to be a football player. In other words, he's looking for somebody. He was told to come in here. And Brody walked up, and I was about eye to eye with him because I had the boots on. And he said, can I help you? I said, yeah, I need to talk to someone who's in charge. He said, Greg. Greg came over, and I said, hey, this is who I am. This is what I want to do. And he said, brought over Brad and said, you guys exchange numbers. Call him.
Was that in Denver?
Yeah.
Because they were running Denver a lot at that time.
Yeah, right? It was sold out. I think the old Denver Auditorium held 8,800 people. And it was a great house.
All right.
And it was sold. And Gene Reed was the promoter. And Gene Reed came up and said, you know, you're Leon White. I've seen you in the paper because I was just down the road in Boulder. I was an two-time All-American. And Gene said, Greg, we got to have this guy. If he wants to train, we could just, like, you know.
So kind of, I mean, not luckily, but hey, like, that's a nice, it adds a nice thing to it that this guy recognizes you.
Yeah, well, that's, and again, so I'm thinking, hey, once a month I can come down here and wrestle. You know? So
if it was only that easy. Well, Vader, man, it's been a pleasure to have you on. You know, one of the greatest big guy wrestlers ever, man. Ever. And you're the cool thing is you're still lifting. You're still on the scene. You're still doing it. You've like kind of made a little bit of a resurgence, if you will, yeah?
I don't know.
You've been getting at it a little more lately.
It's Vader time forever.
There it is.
At yahoo.com for contact.
So if promoters want to book you, it's VaderTimeForever at yahoo.com.
Yeah.
You're on Twitter.
Yeah. At It's Vader Time.
You're selling shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com.
Yeah. Oh, that's your company. I'd throw that in.
Well, it's important.
Yeah.
And there's really cool ones. I like the one that's just your mask. And there's like the clocks with It's Vader Time. That's great.
Yeah, there's some good ones. There's really good ones. I liked this latest one we came up with. So
It was a Japanese
old school
design.
Japanese one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So had the Vader and some Japanese writing, and it really is.
It looks really
cool. It's a badass shirt.
It's
got the old school full look with the new technology, you know.
It looks like kind of a retro shirt, but it's cool.
It is retro.
Yeah.
But it's so cool.
So, I mean, what's the looking forward? What are you thinking?
I don't know, man. I'm writing a book. I've got a publisher interested in a writer, and I invented an exercise device, and it's patent pending, and you know, trying to find the right deal for that. And,
cool. So you got stuff going, man.
Well, you know, we'll see.
You're doing it. I want to make sure you're getting everything in here that you want.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Are we missing anything?
I'm good.
You good?
Yeah.
Cool, man. I appreciate it.
All right, bro.
Thank you. All right, it's Vader time. I'm going to tell you one thing that I regret going into this. We did not talk Boy Meets World. I am sorry. Sal Renaro, I am sorry. Most of the world, sorry. I wish we could have gotten into it. Maybe we'll talk a little bit on something for a bonus episode about Boy Meets World now that me and my friend, Big Van Vader, we chum up a little bit, you know? All right, before we get out of here, let's get into some plugs and upcoming events. All right, the best way that you can support ColtMerch.com, DigitalColt.com. I got a Twitter and an Instagram, at Colt Cabana. My email is very public, ColtWrestling@gmail.com. Maybe you're a promoter and want to put me on your upcoming show or convention. ColtCabana.com is my website. I have a P.O. box there, and I love getting snail mail. Plus Facebook/AOW Podcast and /ColtCabana. Upcoming this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, February 27th through March 1st, Indianapolis, Indiana. It's a convention, CultureShockCon.com. Thursday, March 5th, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, WrestleCenter.com. Friday, I will be in Boston hanging out, but Saturday, I will be performing March 7th, Boston, Massachusetts, and doing a live podcast, Boston Pro Wrestling Marathon.com.
Friday, March 13th, Houston, Texas, LoneStarWrestling.com. Saturday, March 14th, Baltimore, Maryland, MarylandWrestling.com. Sunday, March 15th, Denver, Colorado, Facebook/LuchaLibreLass. Saturday and Sunday, March 21st and 22nd, Cardiff, Wales in the United Kingdom, Film and Comic Con, Cardiff.com. WrestleMania weekend, I will be all over the place. I'm doing some comedy, but mainly I will be at WrestleCon.com. I will be at all of the sessions. I think we're doing some live podcasting. It's going to be a great time. Thursday, April 9th, I'm doing a live comedy show in Chicago. We're making fun of bad wrestling. ColtCabana.com for those tickets. Friday, April 10th, Berwyn, Illinois, AAWrestling.com. Saturday, April 11th, LaSalle, Illinois, DreamWaveWrestling.com. Make a weekend of it, you Illinoisters. All right, that is the episode for this week. Big thank you to you at home for listening. Thanks to Big Van Vader for coming on the show. Thanks to Cable Guy Jeff and Stu Stone. Thanks to Kid Russell, Matt Jenkins on the music, Dane Miller with the tech help. Thanks to our sponsors, HighSpots.com. Hundreds of full-length titles available to download, plus all the $5 wrestling titles, AMA knee pads, gear, masks, Wrestling Ring, the Freight Train documentary, which is amazing. Thanks to OneHourTees.com, who helps run ProWrestlingTees.com. That's the place where you can directly support your favorite independent wrestler. Support them directly by buying their t-shirts. And tweakedaudio.com/Colt, the earbuds I'm wearing right now. Get over 30% off and free shipping just because you listen to this show. I am going to go work out at the awful hotel gym and then get in my amazing hotel bed, which I never have to make, and I can throw the towels wherever I want, and I don't have to clean up, and I feel like a real king. I love the road. Some people hate it, man. I love it. This hotel life, it's the life for me. All right, this has been the Art of Wrestling for Colt Cabana. I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks.
Sit him down now.
Feeny, You can't tell me what to do anymore. I'm not one of your punk students. I'm the face of death.